horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
We're back. Hour two, and just like I mentioned at the top of the show, unbelievable. The word came in the last half hour that Un Ojo's foot bruise is barking, is the barking dogs. Really tough. He worked a couple of days ago, and Ricky Corville telling Dave Joseph and the team, Mike Kane and everybody, that he can't run. Ugh, unbelievable. That's too bad. Well, it's 10 o'clock on a Monday, and that for 15 years meant one thing. Johnny D, and he's back where he belongs. Good morning.
Morning, Stevie. You know, I got a chance to chat with Casey because the last time he called, I guess, was in a hurry. Or I guess maybe he didn't really want to talk to me that much, one or the other. But I got to chat with him a little bit this morning. And, of course, I haven't spoken to him in quite a while, too. After you know, having a Monday morning chat with him for 15 years, I didn't get to talk to him for a while. So it was nice to finally check in with him.
Sweet. That's awesome. And I think that much of the things that we enjoy most about, you know, about doing this, kind of all, you know, returning to normal. And I know you're not coming down this week, but this has always been one of your favorite stops too, so I hope it's only a one-year hiatus.
Absolutely. I love the Preakness. I had a pretty good string there going for a while, and then I had to miss one year I had a bad tooth that kind of flared up on me one year, and I missed it. But I'll bet, I'm going to say I probably had a string of, you know, maybe a once-interrupted string of probably 20-something years on running. So this year is a little different, so I won't be there this year. I was there with Kids to the Cup many years ago. I was there before that. In fact, my wife and I, our first out-of-town date, trip, visit, whatever you want to call it, sojourn, was to the Preakness Stakes. I can't tell you what year. It was the year of the year the guy ran out on the racetrack and tried to punch the horse.
Wow. Artax.
Yeah. Artax, yeah. And I think Charismatic, I think. Was that his year? I'm pretty sure it was his year.
That's 99, right?
Yeah, that would be right. Yeah, 99. Because after the race, back at the stakes barn, it was cold, and I don't know if it was rainy, but it was cold. I know that it was very cold as you can get. The Preakness is like the Derby. You can either get 80 degrees or you can get 40 degrees. And this was one of those 40 degrees. And back at the stakes barn after the race, Chris Antley had ridden Charismatic, of course, and he came out of the barn, and he had a baseball cap on, and we all gathered around there, and Wayne Lucas, of course, was there, trainer. And we're all standing around, and I saw that Gail, my wife, was cold, so I took my jacket off, and I gave it to her. And I wrapped it around her shoulders. And she said, "You know, you were the only guy to take his jacket off and put it around his girl." She said, "And that's when I fell in love with you."
Oh, that's the sweetest story ever.
Yeah, so the Preakness is it's a moment, you know, but this year with the way things have changed and all, it's I'm not going to be there, but I think in honor of it, I'm going to run out to KFC Saturday morning, or wait a minute, I think Wednesday
morning, Thursday,
Wednesday, th- Thursday morning. I'm going to run out and get some KFC and have it for breakfast. And it's just to honor the fried chicken for breakfast that's usually served at the Alibi Breakfast, which is one of, was one of racing's nice events. Because, it was originally started trainers making excuses for their horses running poorly before the race. And, of course, we all know what those excuses, there's a whole list of what those excuses could be. You can blame it on the track. You can blame it on the jock. You can blame it on the draw. You've got a bunch of, things you can blame it on. And so that the trainers would get together and they would make the excuses publicly before the race. And then they started a breakfast around, and then it developed into a very nice event at Pimlico, and one of my favorites on the racing circuit. And of course, we lost it to COVID for a year or two, probably two
years.
Yeah,
I'm the longest tenured Old Hilltop winner ever.
Yes. And of course, they give out various awards, and Steve was the recipient of one of the awards the last time they had the event. So I always enjoyed it. And they serve a breakfast with a buffet breakfast, and I can't remember. Did they do away with? I think they did away with the fried chicken last time.
No, there was one year where the fried chicken was unceremoniously left off the menu, and
yeah.
You complained so loud and long that it came back the next year.
don't blame me and don't give me the credit. I don't want either. but I think you're right. I think I remember that, yeah.
It came back.
That was like 4 years ago, yeah.
I think it's longer.
So that's what the fried chicken for breakfast, that's where that comes from. So I'm going to run out to KFC. Although they opened up a new fried chicken place a little closer than the KFC, and probably a little better. It's called Lovebird. Have you had any Lovebird?
I've heard about Lovebird. Yeah.
It's not the Colonel, man. The Colonel, I don't know what he puts in that secret recipe, but
well,
that stuff is good.
Well, Maryland, first of all, Maryland and Delaware raises, the University of Delaware is not the Blue Hens by accident, and Maryland fried chicken is a thing. It's not like it's not like there isn't a very strong fried chicken culture right here. Kansas City, too. Kansas City, you got the pan fried chicken is a big deal. Stroud's, got to go to Stroud's.
Yeah. Well, I'm a chicken fan. I love chicken, and if you want to fry it, I'll eat it. If you want to grill it, I'll eat it.
Well,
you want to roast it, Kenny Rogers, I'll eat it.
You're game, huh?
Yeah, I'm game. But
I do like. I don't mind. You know what I like is I like when the chicken gets pounded thin. I like anything that veal. Beef, anything pounded thin and rolled. I love rolltini. I love a good cordon bleu. Anything along those lines. My absolute favorite, Brajol.
You know what else? I miss Baltimore. Is I usually work in by the time this week is finished. I've had my fill of crab. I don't need to see crab the rest of the summer. By the time Creek this weekend is over, traditionally, because I formerly used to go have, the hard-shelled crabs and obrekkies. We did a whole obrekkies thing. Remember somebody, we talked about it on the air, and then we got a message from someone that it was in the airport in D.C.
Oh, my God. That's a million years ago.
Yeah, right. And that was a great place. But, I hate to say this, but even the crabs aren't what they were before. They're not quite. I went to a place that was good. I'll give them a plug. Costas, it was called. Costas.
Sure.
C-O-S-T-A-S. good crabs there, very good crabs. But and then, of course, you know, with Express Bet, when I was with Express Bet, I would go and the VIP events. We had some great VIP events for the Preakness because, of course, that was a Stronach property, and we had a tent on the first turn, and those were great because you got to hang out with fabulous people, horse players, you know, serious horse players, and we had some great dinners and parties and things. So that was always great fun. So the Preakness has been, one of my favorites for a long time. And of course, when we had, I'll tell you this quick story, which, look, if you've known me long enough, you've heard all my stories. I'm not getting any new stories. So if you've heard these before, you'll just have to go with the flow or go get a glass of water or something. We're at the Preakness with Kids to the Cup, and we had about maybe 10 kids and maybe 10, roughly 10 parents, 15 kids, 15 parents, 30 people maybe. And it is raining so hard, you can't see 2 feet in front of you, but everyone's come, you know, for this weekend. And it's, let's see, it's Thursday. No, it's Friday morning. Wait, hold the phone here. Let me figure this out now. I believe it's Thursday. No, it's Friday. It's Friday morning, and we're at the Stakes Barn. I have this group of 30 parents and kids around between the ages of like 8 and 13, you know, somewhere in that range, and standing in the pouring rain. And we go to see John Sheriffs, who's got the Kentucky Derby winner, Giacomo. And, of course, I knew John from California. And John's a great guy and a racing historian. He loves the game. And I thought, well, you know, I had set it up previously that we would visit with John on Friday morning. So here we are. And the horses are circling in the shed row. Not outside, of course, because it's pouring. They're circling in the shed row. And I go up to the barn at the, you know, Lucas is on one end, and the Derby winner traditionally is on the other end. And that's where John Sheriffs was, at that end of the... So he's on the corner, and I go to John standing outside his office under the shed row, out of the rain, and I'm standing in the rain, and I step into the shed row, I say, John, I've got the Kids of the Cup here, and they're all standing in the pouring rain, and I said, would you speak to them? And he kind of looks at them, he says, yeah, he said, sure. He said, but they'll have to put those umbrellas down. Well, we're standing there, and I say, we are right next to Giacomo's stall. And John Sheriff says, no, he says, that's not right. I said, well, what do you mean, John? He said, no, we're in Giacomo's stall.
Stall 40.
And you should have seen these kids. They were like, over the moon. I mean, you're standing in the Kentucky Derby winner's stall at the Preakness, and the trainer is, and of course he spoke to them. He talked to them about he was great, talking about the history of racing and the history of the Preakness and the Derby and how much it meant to people and what the Triple Crown meant for everybody. But I mean, he was fabulous. But here we are standing in this stall, and meanwhile, as we're talking, of course, Giacomo's walking by us underneath the shed row. We're standing here. Giacomo's passing us as we're listening to John talk. So that was a special moment too. So many great moments.
I got Johnny. You got to take a second, and then we're going to circle back to Derby and work through a few things because I do have an agenda for you today. The Kids to the Cup, and it's so funny that you bring it up in this, you know, in this moment. 2 weeks ago, at Derby, Dean and Tracy Wilkes, who have a, it's now become a bit of a tradition. Derby week, have had a gathering at their house, and I've been going, I don't know, 6-7 years. And Jill Byrne was there with Merv Huber.
Yeah.
And I want you to explain to people, because when I did the symposium session about 5 or 6 years ago, they tried to do one of those 45 ideas in 45 minutes, where five of us each, you know, threw out 9 ideas. And one of the 9 that I had suggested was reinstituting, I mean, there'll never be another Trudy McCaffrey, but we still have you. And the idea of the Kids to the Cup concept being rebooted. And, you know, at this point, there's quite a few graduates of Kids to the Cup that are in positions around the game that could, you know, help kind of reboot it. You know, Hollywood is constantly doing this, rebooting things that were successful. Explain Kids to the Cup and Trudy and your role and the graduates that are dotting the industry now.
Well, Kids to the Cup started, the internet was in its infancy. I mean, it was very early. It was probably, not in late 90s probably. I don't know the exact, you know, and the details. I mean, I'm going to be very fuzzy on the details because it's, I wasn't prepared for this question, but, my memory's gotten old along with the rest of me. But Trudy said to me, there are these kids on the internet who are presidents of fan clubs, horse fan clubs. And I'm telling you, this was at the infancy. There was hardly anyone on the internet. Hardly anyone knew what the internet was. But, of course, kids did. And there were these kids that were presidents of different horses. And one kid was the president of the Freehouse fan club.
Hmm.
And the different kids were presidents. So they had written to Trudy, and I think they wanted to go to the Breeders' Cup. And Trudy grabbed me, I believe it was at Del Mar, and she grabbed me by the arm. She said, come on, you're gonna do this with me. I said, what? Okay, what? And she said, we're going to get these kids to the Breeders' Cup. She said, I'm going to raise the money, and you're going to do the work. I said, okay. So we did. We put it together through the help of the Breeders' Cup, and I believe that was Gulfstream Park. And we had, I believe, 5 or 6 attendees, kids and their parents, at the Breeders' Cup that year. The Breeders' Cup worked with us, and as I said, Gulfstream worked with us. And through my connections with the trainers, we were able to set up interviews with all the top trainers. We would visit their barns, have a barn tour, and I would take this group around, and the trainers would speak to them and let them pet horses and go down the shed row and talk about each horse. I mean, each trainer had his own way of doing things, and it went well. And so Trudy said to me after the event, she said, I said to her, I said, you know, Trudy, I asked one of the kids, I said, okay, you guys are racing fans, but how many kids are there out there like you guys? You know what I mean? How many young kids are fans of racing? And they looked at me and they just said, a lot. And it was like effusive, you know, it was like not just, they weren't, you know, trying to trick me. They were serious. I said, really? Yeah, a lot. I said, okay. So I went to Trudy and I said, Trudy, you know, this can be as great as you want it to be because the interest is there. And so she said, well, okay, let me think about it. And she came back to me. She said, okay, let's do it. And so we put up an organization. We called it Kids to the Cup because that was our original trip, was to the Breeders' Cup. And then we started to do other events. And we did the Derby. We did the Preakness. We did the Belmont. We did the Santa Anita Derby. What else did we do? We did the Breeders' Cup every year, of course. I don't know if I mentioned that. And Hollywood Park, we did a race at Hollywood Park. We started to do events at other racetracks that weren't Breeders' Cup races. And then some of our members started to have local events at their own racetrack where they would invite people to come and the racetrack would accommodate them. And, you know, so it really grew. Now, again, the internet was young. If you did it today, it would be unbelievable. The response, it would be incredible. At that time, we had an essay contest, and the winners of the essay contest, we had various people in racing. Jay Hulty was one of the judges for the essays. We had different people at different times judging the essays, and the essay winners and their parent and one parent would get tickets to the event, and then everyone else in the organization was invited to attend our morning stable tour. So we, you know, it got to the point where we were traipsing around with 30, 40 people following me, and sometimes Will Schwartz would be with me to help me out, and Trudy would be there, and we'd be running around the backsides of racetracks leading up to these big events. But it was fabulous, and it went really well for, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 years, maybe. And then Trudy became ill, and she decided she wanted it to just stop. And so we folded it up, and that was it. That was the end of Kids of the Cup. But now part of what's happened is the graduates of the former members of Kids of the Cup, many of them are now involved in the industry. And I say many. Okay, so I'm going to throw out a rough number because I don't know, of course, everyone. I'm going to say 15, maybe, of our members are now working in the racing industry in some capacity. And that's like 15 out of 60. I mean, it's a really big percentage, or 100, whatever our traveling group was. It's a big percentage of it. In fact, 5 of our kids, who were all girls, went to the University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program, and they all roomed together at the school there. And all of them, I believe all of them graduated from there. And almost all of them are working. I don't know. I think all of them are doing something in the racing industry. So it varies from, you know, we didn't have many boys, a lot of girls, because girls, you know, girls love horses, and so we had mostly girls, and we didn't really talk about the wagering aspects of things. We talked more about the racing, the sport, the business, that stuff, and we were careful to always have a parent, you know, accompany any member had to have a parent accompany them. You know, you had to do all the things that all the due diligence to make sure everyone was safe. But it was really something. It was really something. And I at a later date, I'll tell you some of the trainer reactions at different times when I showed up and we showed up for kind of. To greet them on the Friday before the main event, which was not always a welcome sight, but they were all, you know, that's one thing about our sport / business / game, whatever you want to call it, is that our participants are usually very gracious, sharing themselves and their time and their knowledge with people who are interested in racing. If you ever have a chance to be around the trainer in the morning or in the afternoon at the races or out to dinner, you know, they're very willing to talk about what they do and about their horses and about their, you know, if you want to hear a guy talk, ask him about his horse. You know, they just love to, you know, talk about how things are going. Anyway, the Kids of the Cup story, that's a really condensed version, but I think, and I probably left out some of the great high points over the years. where we'd go to dinner on Friday night, and we'd set it up. You know, we'd have a group of 20 or 30 people coming for dinner, and John E's Steakhouse in Kentucky. With Johnny, he was a great supporter, and the Derby Restaurant at Santa Anita. Chip used to own it, and I think he sold it. He was a great supporter. You know, I mean, everyone was involved with the or got involved with the organization, and Trudy did a phenomenal job of not only just, you know, raising money, but of, you know, she knocked on a lot of doors that, what do they say on the Shark Tank? When I make a phone call, they'll answer my call, they'll return my call. Well, when Trudy called, people returned their call. So she was a great ambassador for sport, and she was, you know, just, but she was very popular in the game at that time, and it was, she helped break down doors for us and get us moving. And so, I mean, if you want to talk about the future or you want to talk about what's going on, what a good idea for racing, man, that's the thing to do. And there's no reason not to. I mean, I can't think of one. I'm sure maybe somebody will think of one, but I can't think of one. For the sport / industry / business / game / whatever you want to call it, to do to ensure its future. I know that some organizations believe, and maybe rightly so. I don't know. I'm not an expert in that area, but that concerts and the drinking and gambling and smoking cigars and you know, dressing up and all, that's part of the game. Every industry, every business, every racket, anything you want to talk about. But bring a youngster to the racetrack, show them the backside and the horses. Show them a horse and they will come back. You don't have to worry about drawing them back. They will come back. So, okay, so at least say, well, it's a limited scale of it. Well, grow it. You can scale it. It can be big. It can be as big as you want it to be. And that's true. I mean, I think of, you know, our good friend Will and his son Drew. Excuse me. When Drew was, I don't know, 8, 9 years old, and he would accompany us for years on end, not years on end, but for a couple of years on our Saratoga trips. He would go to the racetrack with us. He would go to events, and he would sit there and he would do his little handicapping while we were trying to figure out the races, and we'd go out in the morning and we'd do all the things we do. Excuse me. And then when he became a teenager, he kind of said to Will one day, well, Dad, I don't think I'm going to go this year. And Will said to me, you know, Drew, he's kind of drifting away from racing. I said, don't worry, he'll be back. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, think about it. You're young, you're a teenager. You want to hang out with your friends. You want to go to parties. Let's say you go to college. You got other stuff going on. You're not really, you don't have money, first of all. You can't be gambling. You don't have money to lose. Yep. And then, you know, all of a sudden, 30, you start to look for different outlets, you know, different exactly. things to do. And so for some people, it's a little later. They don't come back till later after the kids are grown. But they will come back, is my point. You have to expose young people to the game when they're very young. And they will come back because it's a great game. You have to start with that basic premise. First of all, it's entertaining. It's exciting. The gambling part of it, it's the greatest gambling. I still believe it. And I've played a lot of the other games. This one is the best for me. For other people, they like other things. But this one is challenging. It never stops. and now it's accessible from everywhere. So, long story short, very long story short, Kids of the Cup was a great idea. Trudy came up just out of the goodness of getting these kids for the Breeders' Cup and having an idea of how to do it. And it turned into a very, I think it was a proof of concept that something like that can work. Does anybody care? Ah, that's another story. Does anybody in management care? Maybe not.
There's no doubt about the value, and in fact, I ran into was it either Derby Day or it might have been Oaks Day. I'd had her on the show, Anise Montplaisir. She's the driving one of the major driving forces behind the Amplify concept, and they've done a tremendous job, and this is imperative. The conversation we had with Merv at the Wilkes's, and that Jill Byrne really brought out, was the real glaring need for a next generation of involvement, and that's in the racing offices. That's in, every other support capacity of the game. And so that's how the whole Kids to the Cup, because I turned to Huber and I said, well, Kids to the Cup, who else? We've got Allie Kirchner and Elise Jacobs, of course, and Susie Rasher and Jessica Paquette.
And it's so many, I don't want to forget anyone. There's so many of them out there.
I should get a working list.
Let me give you a quick Merv story. So we've got Kids to the Cup, and Merv is, I don't know, maybe he's 12 years old, maybe. Churchill Downs has a handicapping contest, and Merv wins the handicapping contest. Well, he's not eligible to win the contest because he's not old enough to be. But he wins. It was like a series of, it was a handicapping contest. He won it. So Churchill, at that time John Asher, awarded Merv with there were a bunch of prizes which he couldn't win any of them, but John Asher, who obviously was a great man at Churchill, got a way to get Merv two tickets to the Derby. As kind of a, look, you won, but you didn't win. Kind of a consolation prize. And so we're at dinner one night at Johnny's, and, everyone's all happy, congratulating Merv. And Merv comes over to me and he says, here. I said, what's this? He gives me tickets. He says, these are the two tickets they gave me. He said, I think you should give them to somebody who kicked the cup. So he handed us, the organization, two Derby tickets to give to. Now, Merv was from Louisville, so he was going anyway. He said, I'm going to a party or something. I forget what he said. So he said, but here, I want to donate these tickets to Kids of the Cup. Now, that's a 12, 13-year-old boy. I don't know whether he came up with that on his own. I never asked him, but I don't care if he did or he didn't. That's a tremendous gesture. And just shows the quality of both the individual and the group of members that we had. So I will never forget that gesture from a young man who is now working in the racing industry. It's fabulous.
Yeah, that is. I'm glad that story came out. Well, this continues to be a project. I promised, I told Jill, I said, well, I'll bring this up to Johnny, and you did it yourself. So it's funny that this kind of just organically came out. Johnny, let me get a couple of things in, and we've managed to completely 30 minutes in, and we haven't touched on any of the topics really that I had actually laid out. Your Derby thoughts and any success over the 2 days? Your thoughts about the shocker and also the somewhat equally shocking decision not to run back.
Well, about the Derby, I don't want to talk about it. I mean, shocker. Yeah, shocker. Just a reminder of how fabulous, incredibly fabulous and entertaining and amazing and awful and terrible and disgusting and just revolting this game can be. all in the same moment. I mean, to have a horse who wasn't even in the race on Friday win the Kentucky Derby at 80-1, go ahead, you know, start the projector, run the movie, because it doesn't happen in real life. That only happens in the movie. The guy weaves, bobs and weaves through the entire field and comes roaring down the stretch. This horse was claimed for $30,000. Come on, man. That doesn't happen. When's that going to happen in real life? Well, it did. And on top of that, to his connections, just fun people. And look, the little guy has to win once in a while or the game doesn't work, you know?
That's true.
Nobody would play if the little guy didn't win once in a while, you know? If the ball doesn't land in your number once in a while, you wouldn't play the game. You know, you got to win sometime. And it happens every so often. We even addressed this the last time I talked to you. We talked about handicapping for the Derby and how things can happen that you don't understand, you can't explain. Well, you know, we talked about Mind That Bird and the racetrack that day and the trip he got. And here we go again. You know, the racetrack, the trip he got, the pace, the scratch. How do you get into the race? Well, you got to have a horse scratch. And post the outside post, come on. It's not going to happen. But it did. It did. And it blew up. I had everything going. I had everything going to one horse who finished second. Epicenter, who ran a great race. And he finished second. And I had pick five, pick four, pick tri super, all stakes pick three. I had everything singled in. And he ran a great race. I was right. Everything I said about him was right. All my analysis was right. I did everything correctly. And I lost. So you tell me this isn't a tough game. You know, Zandon, I thought was the second best. Here they come down the stretch. Just don't go by them. Just don't go by them. I'm riding Epicenter hard. That's probably why I got beat. He couldn't carry me, too. You know, to keep Zandon back. And I'm looking. I had everything. Who's this? Who is this? Who is this? Who is this? Oh, no, no, no. And so there you go. So that's what I thought of the Derby. Now, Rich, you know, it was his day. And, I mean, it happened. That's why they run the race. We keep, you know, people say it. It's a cliche, but it's true. It's why you run the race. It's why you play the game. Because upsets happen, and I think that's where the word comes from, doesn't it? Anyway, I was shocked. I was shocked. I can go back and say, look, if Rich Strike had finished second or third or fourth, maybe third or fourth. Let's be, if I'm being reasonable, third or fourth. I could say, you know, maybe, and it cost me the super or the try, I could say maybe, well, you should have looked at him. You knew he'd be closing. There was a chance there was going to be a hot pace. You know, he could, but to win from that post, matched up against Epicenter, who I thought was a really solid horse, I couldn't even feel bad other than the losing part. You know, there's often the way you feel as a horse player. You lose, and it's the money that you're upset. You know, you want to win the money. You want to win. And then there's the part where you want to know you've done the work and that you've handicapped the race properly and you've picked a winner and you've analyzed it and everything. You've done a good job. Well, did all that. I look back. I can't use them on top. I can't use them in the two. I probably couldn't use them in the three hole. Maybe four hole. Maybe just because he's a closer, maybe. But so you don't feel bad about, I don't know what I'm looking at. I know what I'm looking at. This one was just an outlier, and that's going to happen once in a while.
Johnny, what do you make of the, and how do you suggest players and fans and stakeholders view?
If their horse is right, if the time is right, if the situation is right, and they think they can win, they will run. Even if they will run. And when you're in the second leg of the Triple Crown, you're going to run. Unless you can't run. Now, why can't you run? Well, maybe the trainer figures race doesn't set up for him. But you're going to run. It's the second leg of the Triple Crown. You're going to run. I don't know anything about this horse. I don't know anything about his connections. I have no inside information, and I don't want any inside information. My experience is you will run. Is it quick back? Yes, it's quick back. Did that horse run an amazing race? Is he knocked out? He's probably knocked out a little bit. I would be. I know I would be. And then so it starts the conversation again. The Triple Crown is, it's got to be changed. It doesn't have to be changed. It takes a special horse at a special time for it to happen. We waited. Did you forget? We waited 30. Then we got bang, bang. We got him again because it was a special horse at a special time. They have to be a certain type of horse brought up to the race in the proper method, not just an explosion, boom. You know, that's, you know, they're not running back because they don't think they can win. What's the reason? I don't know what the reason is, but they don't think they can win. That's why they're not running. Will he be better in the Belmont? We can talk about that when the Belmont comes up. But, you know, it was his day in Louisville. And I these people that want to say, oh, it's too quick back and horses that run, you know why they don't run back? Because they can't. They can't. They can't run back. Well, it's too close. It's been too close for over 120-something years. It's been too close. But some horses can do it. Some horses can't. So does it need to be changed? I don't think so, because I think if we say your name and we say Triple Crown winner, that's got to mean something. Like, you know, baseball used to have a Triple Crown. But then people stopped winning it. So they stopped talking about it. They didn't change the rules for the Triple Crown. They just stopped talking about it. Did that happen in racing? No. We still talk about it. We still have it. It just takes a special individual to get the job done. Special team of owners and trainers and jockeys and everything. Luck. There's so many factors. It's a special thing. It's like, you know, I hear arguments about Hall of Fame. Oh, this horse should be in the Hall of Fame. That horse should be in the Hall of Fame. He should be in the Hall of Fame. He should. Okay, for me, this is Johnny D's rule. If you have to discuss whether he should be in the Hall of Fame or not, he shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. If you have to have a meeting, he shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. I don't care what sport it is. If you have to have a meeting and he's like on the border, No. Now, maybe that means we need to have another level of a Hall of Fame. Like, instead of a hall, we can actually give them, like, a whole room and call it the Room of Fame instead of a hallway. I don't know, but there are certain horses that if you bring up a name, everybody says, oh, one of the all-time greats. He's in the Hall of Fame. If you bring up a name, somebody says, well, you know, he had to get a good year, and he won the Breeders' Cup, and he did this, and he did that, and but, you know, all right, well, is there another category we can have for, like, really good horses? You know, like, can we have a place with, and that's the Triple Crown. There's, you know, like everybody says with the trainers and the jockeys always say whenever they tell anyone on an airplane or in an airport or whatever, or traveling, what do you do? Oh, I'm a jockey. Do you ever ride in Kentucky Derby? Yeah. Do you ever win it? They want to be able to say yes. Trainers, same thing. So I think with the Triple Crown, that should be it. Like, if you win the Triple Crown, it's a special thing. Don't change it. I don't think we need to change it. Is it tough? Yes. Modern day thoroughbreds can't run back. Yeah, well, they just did it. Two of them just did it not too long ago. I was graduating college the last time one did it before them. So it's a special thing. It can be done. This is not the right year. It happens every single year. They want to change the Triple Crown. Leave the Triple Crown alone. It's not bothering you. Well, the Preakness is suffering. The Preakness is not suffering. This is going to be a very entertaining race. We don't have the Derby winner. Okay, we don't have the Derby winner. Life goes on. It's still going to be a good race. It's still going to be a fabulous day. It's going to have plenty of questions. Can Epicenter, you know, what will that effort take out of him? And if I thought he was a cinch in the Derby, well, he's got to be a cinch in the Preakness. Not necessarily now. It's 2 weeks back and blah, 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 blah. We got to look at it. You've got, as you so adamantly like to say, we have new shooters.
I thought we'd gone a week without that. Those
no
words.
Way. You, no you, way.
Oh.
I did it. You know I did on purpose. but we do. And a guy named Chad Brown's got one. And he's good with new shooters. he's good with old shooters, too, that guy. But anyway, you know, no, don't change it. Leave it alone. I'm looking forward to the race. I'm looking forward to the day. I hope the weather holds out, which I think it, will. You know, I don't know. It looks clear all week here, so...
You've got the famous Johnny D theorem, which is it'll rain one of the 2 days. Right.
And I always hoped I was wrong, right? It's one bet I would make that I would always hope I didn't catch.
Well, Johnny, I did have something else, but I'll save it, and we'll look for, hopefully you'll give us another, well, although right now, if Fenwick does get involved, we're back up to 9 to replace Un'Oo, but we still have got a set of principles here that look very firm and pretty obvious when it comes to Epicenter and early voting, and then the Philly Secret Oath simplification, and then... You know, among the prices that somebody, you always want to find somebody like we did with certainly in the Philly race last week with Oaks, we, you know, able to get Desert Dawn involved. You know, Happy Jack, Creative Minister, those feel like the two, you know, the two price potentials that look like they might have an opportunity to somehow get involved and boost this up. But, you know, your concept, and I laid it out for people on the website and on Twitter, the, you know, the the keying of Epicenter and the way you built the ticket, that the ticket worked in principle. You got the oddball that came running and got a miracle ride, but the concept, conceptually, the way the ticket was built, because I wanted to talk to you about the all button discussion that obviously came out of the weekend. We'll save that, though.
All right. Put it on the shelf. The good news is now I can wait to do my handicapping. I don't need to do it like 2 weeks in advance. Now I can wait and wait till it all comes together, post positions, and I get all my items lined up, and I can do my handicapping with more information.
Yeah, we will make sure everybody gets the word. This was perfect, Johnny. I appreciate it, and I will. Well, I don't know if I'm going to go downstairs. I do have my new piece of equipment. That means I could broadcast from the terrace and adjacent to the Alibi Breakfast. Maybe we'll see. Maybe we'll do that.
What
and if I do, I will have a crab cake and piece of chicken for you.
Yeah. When are they going to have, is it still moving forward, the reconstruction and everything?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're probably delayed a year, but it's happening. We'll get the latest official state of the Maryland project from Alan Foreman this week, as we always do.
Good, good. I like to hear the updates. I'm looking forward to when that's completed.
Yeah,
it'll be nice to have a new home for the Preakness.
Well, all of the traditional Preakness Week elements are in place, and that should include as well a Leon Blushewicz visit. Haven't talked to Blue in a few months, but I have already sent out the crab cake recipe for a few people that have asked, and I'll send it out a few more times this week, and so you'll be ready for Saturday for those of you that want to make Blue's famed best you ever ate Maryland crab cake.
Yeah, the only problem this year, I think, is that you'll have to take out a second mortgage to buy the crab.
Yeah, the crab is out of sight. It's yeah, good point. Hadn't thought about that, but you're right.
But it's worth
it. It is worth it. It's a treat. It's supposed to it just like the Triple Crown. It's supposed to be hard. The crab cake is supposed to be a treat.
That's right. Special occasions. We need more special. You know, and I have to say, the Derby was so much fun. The weather cooperated. It was all doom and gloom heading in, but actually coming out, it was pretty good. And another place where it rains one day or the other, but it turned out to be really good. And it was good. And the racing in New York was great this weekend too. It's a fun time of year, really.
This week with us, and Johnny back in the 10 o'clock slot as radio as it was meant to be.
Yeah.
at the races style anyway. Johnny, I appreciate it. I will talk to you during the week, and we'll see what your official decisions are once we get PPs tonight.
All right, Stevie, take care. Have a good trip to the Charm City.
Always, always love coming. Johnny D, everybody, XB. Johnny D, let's take a break here, top of the hour. We got a busy third hour, too, because we're going to get that conversation in with Jim Miller, as promised. I got Todd Mostoller. Want to talk to Todd because they're opening today at Presque Isle, and Graham Motion as well. All right, back after this. Hour three at the races. We're live from Old Hilltop. Hi-ho, Pimlico, Preak this week. Stay with us.
To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you,
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing.
The races. September 24th, PA Derby Day has two more races, each with a $200,000 purse. The PA Stallion Series. Yet another reason why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race. For more, please visit PABred.com.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's racetrack industry.